Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo, and the team from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. In this episode, we'll be exploring how a piece of government policy has been used to create cultural change within a business. To share their story and journey, we are joined by Mike Davis and Kirsty Godson. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks, James.
I really appreciate you both taking some time to join us today. Do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about yourselves?
Okay, I'm Kirsty Godson. I'm the head of social impact. The role sits in an area of human resources called talent, learning and culture. And my role is really about developing initiatives, solutions to diversify talent pipelines and encourage employees to volunteer, to fundraise for our local, large charity. And it's providing social value solutions for our bids as well.
And I'm Mike Davis. I'm a learning specialist at Talis. I've been in learning and development for many, many years, so many years that I've known James for about 15 of them. I've worked in lots of different industries, and I've always been a big believer in experiential activities in learning. And this whole social value / social impact agenda has just been a godsend in terms of giving me the opportunity to take people to areas and tasks outside their normal work.
So you've both mentioned in your intros there something called social value, and I know that's sort of where this story begins, but it goes much further, which is where we're going to explore. So just to set the scene, and for those of our listeners who aren't aware, can you talk me through what social value is and what implications that then had for your business?
Yeah, social value is a piece of legislation that came into being a few years ago, and it's to ensure really that government contracts are actually awarded not just on technical, on money, but also on the impact, the social impact that they could potentially have. So it's all part of the government initiative in terms of levelling up.
That's a government initiative, and we've all seen these come out before. And, you know, not that I'm the most cynical person in the world, but sometimes organisations might approach those with a tick box mentality, or approach them for thinking about how can they get away with doing the minimal possible to be able to comply with that legislation or regulation or rules or whatever that happens to be. So rather than do that, how did your business approach this?
I think that's probably where it starts for a lot of organisations. You know, it's then about what you do with it. So the legislation might say that in order to have any chance of winning this particular bid, you have to be able to demonstrate social impact in the area that bid is going to take place. And you're right, it's quite possible, I guess, for people to do the absolute minimum. But I think what we're going to talk to you about today is how this social value, social impact has created a cultural change within our organization, because people like Kirsty and Kirsty's team have driven to such a great extent the power of volunteering and using, and you know, I've benefited from that in terms of being able to use experiential activities in learning events. And actually then what you've seen is it like a triple benefit. So you can see a benefit for an individual that undertakes a social value activity. You can see a benefit maybe then to whoever they've achieved that with, whether it's a school activity or maybe an environmental activity. And then the third benefit, of course, is it ties into that original bid that might have driven us to get involved in it in the first place. But I'm sure Kirsty will talk a little bit more depth about that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we took advantage of the situation, really, because that government legislation sort of gave a renewed focus on things that we were passionate about to begin with. It enabled us to have some resource. It enabled us to grow a team, which a really important step is actually having a team to be able to actually do the work. So, yeah, I think we took an advantage. We saw it as a great opportunity. What we could see is that we wanted our work that we do in our local community to be very much a red thread throughout our HR initiatives. So rather than it being standalone, and purely there for a bid, we definitely wanted it to sort of change the DNA of our organisation. And I think that's what we've seen happen over the past really 18 months.
So going back, you've indicated that there was some level of sort of social value activity going on in business, but you didn't maybe have that focus and the impetus. And as you've said, the resource to be able to make that happen. Now, you know, going on that journey, I'm sure wasn't easy because, yes, you've got the focus and there is some element in the business. But how have you gone about sort of achieving that and growing that and ultimately leading to something that feels like it's more established in the business than something that's just going to disappear off if some of that legislation or policy changes?
Yeah, we did quite a bit of work in the beginning to sort of listen to any barriers that people put, why they couldn't volunteer. So we tried to make everything as simple as possible. So we did a lot of work. So we did a lot of groundwork, I think, beforehand, listening to what people were passionate about, but also just making it simple. We wrote guidebooks, handbooks. We actually curated opportunities on a platform. So we have a platform with all our volunteering opportunities on there. We did a lot of communication, talking to different areas in the business, talking to leaders. So we did, I'd say a lot of groundwork first before things started to grow. And I think, you know, things have evolved over time as well.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to acknowledge the part that the Talis organisation has played in this. I mean, every single employee in Talis UK, which is over 6,000, nearly 7,000 people, is given 24 hours to volunteer, paid. So paid volunteering time. And if they're in our early careers community, so our apprentices or our graduates, that's 80 hours paid volunteering time. So there's a real commitment from the organisation to say, well, actually, look, social impact, a lot of social impact, social value stuff is about volunteering for charities, volunteering to do community work. We're going to put our money where our mouth is, and we're actually going to commit to that.
And you set aside those hours for people to take. And I know that 24 hours, as we've discussed before, is actually work hours. So that's a one-day period.
Yeah. So 3 days on average, I suppose.
Yeah. So how do you, go from setting that to people actually taking it? Because that can be a real barrier as well, because we're busy. And yes, I'd love to do it, but it's hard to find an opportunity. I know you've talked about platforms and stuff, but how have you made that come to fruition?
First, he's got some great stats here.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen things grow. So we started off in 21, obviously lockdown, recording 700 hours. So we use our Workday tool, so our tool that we book on annual leave. So it's, again, really simple to record volunteering hours. Last year, we did 7,600, so a massive leap. And by June now, we're up to 9,750 hours. So it's a pretty massive leap in terms of people being committed. But I think what's happened as well is that we've had a top-down and a bottom-up approach. So, and the top down, we actually did quite a lot of work with our extended leadership forum. So we actually took volunteering to them, explained how easy it was. And now it actually in 23, for the first time in the UK management board set targets for volunteering. I mean, they're quite ambitious targets, I will say.
It's
a very stretched target, but give us a target and we'll really work to meet that. So I think yeah, it's just become, you know, we're building it into all of our performance cycles, building volunteering into sort of key moments. And Mike, as I was talking about, is building it into all of our learning programs and sort of key learning programs. So I think Mike can give us some great examples where he's used how we've done that.
Yeah, so any large learning program lends itself to an experiential activity. As you know, James, we've written a few ourselves between us. And maybe in the past, we would do that for the sake of the experiential activity. So we'd do the activity and they would learn something from it, and that would be great. But we've got this additional benefit now that if we tie that experiential activity into some form of social impact event, some form of volunteering, for example, we get that third level of benefit. So in the Leading for Results program, that is a global TALIS program which I ran recently, we actually worked with Surrey County Council to send a group out to actually clear invasive weed species from a local common. It was fantastic in terms of it gave them reflection time, it gave them teamwork, it gave them an extended piece of networking. It also got them to we talk a lot about growth mindset in terms of moving from a mindset of survival, where we're just constantly battling what we do every day, to actually thinking about how we grow, how we get better, how we develop, how we can move from that potential stress area. And one of the things we built into the weed clearing piece on the common was we built in a mindfulness session in the woods. So they did a mindfulness session after they'd done the weed clearing, and actually the feedback we got was terrific in terms of, yes, it was time out of the office, it was time out of the classroom, but actually just a chance to think and have some space. So that was a great example. And we've had two project launches or team launches recently as well, one with our aviation division, where one of the things they wanted was they wanted their guys to be much more better at presenting, but not just presenting, but breaking that presentation from a very complex presentation to something that other people can understand, based people who aren't engineers, who aren't experts. So what we did was we basically sprang it on them on a Thursday, on the afternoon of the first day of the session. I had them together. We told them that the following day they were going to a local school to present what they did to a bunch of year 10 students. Well, to say panic struck was an underestimation of the feeling, I think. But the following day, they actually went and they delivered this presentation on behalf of, we partner, Kirsty can tell you more about that, but we partner with local schools to try and develop STEM subjects and people working in STEM so we can develop our future career paths. And they came and they delivered that to a bunch of year 10s. It must have been about 140, 150 kids, is that fair, youngsters in this environment, and went down a storm, and actually they really loved it, they enjoyed doing it. And then afterwards they were really positive about it. So that's another example. And I suppose the third example I was going to think about was I did a project launch with a complex project that had been going on for a while, wasn't necessarily working as well as it could. They'd brought a new team together to work on that project. And they wanted them to work in one of the best things about experiential learning is you get them out, get them in a different environment, get them doing something that's different. And another partnership we have is with a local farm. And that farm is designed specifically, or it was originally designed, to help people with post-traumatic stress disorder. And all the volunteers that work there regularly are people who've had PTSD or similar. And actually the farm is prescribed by local doctors now as well to help people overcome stress and difficulties. So we took that group of people to this farm to help out on the farm. So whether that was planting or looking after the pigs, cleaning out the chicken coop, putting up fences, it was all sorts of activities. I myself was on the back of a lorry with one of the guys shoveling 2 tons of manure from the lorry and laying it out on the farm. So yeah, I was only there to observe, but I couldn't see the poor guy do it on his own. So yeah, that was all about what do we know about these people, how do we know each other, what are our strengths and weaknesses. And some of the stuff that came out of that was fascinating, is when we did the debrief, one of the guys had tended to flit from activity to activity and not really knuckle down to one particular thing. And he got that in feedback. And he was like, yeah, well, I hadn't really thought of that. Perhaps, yeah, perhaps I did. Perhaps I'm not focusing enough on the one specific thing that I should be doing. And it was able to relate that back to the way in which he worked as well. So there's some great learning benefits, as well as the support for the charity or the school or whatever it is we're working for, as well as the fact that it helps us fulfill our contract. So that's what I mean when I talk about triple lock benefit.
And I think, Mike, knowing you, having that ability and creativity and freedom to be able to take some of those activities and make them happen, I can imagine going back into some of my past lives and proposing weeding on a common as an activity. But, you know,
it's amazing what you can get away with.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's that link and that ability to, you know, the trust and the freedom and, you know, bringing those different things. And you've talked about some very different activities there and how they can be applied. And Kirsty, I'm sure across your volunteering, you're seeing some weird, wonderful, creative, really inspirational things, you know, people being able to do something that's really close to them. So Mike talked about those triple lock benefits. Have you got anything to sort of share or examples?
We've got a great example in a Cheadle office where we've got an individual, an engineer who's really passionate about bikes, motorbikes, and he's turned his sort of passion for motorbike into volunteering, and he actually rides blood bikes. So they carry blood and breast milk across Manchester to all the emergency services. And he's been able to use his passion and volunteer for obviously an amazing organisation for a great, great purpose. And that's also being built into our community action fund as well. So we've been able they've been able to bid for some funding, and we've been able to provide some funding for, it's only small amounts, but the funding put all of the things onto a bike that's needed to turn a normal motorbike into a blood bike. And I know within a few months straight away, the impact, you know, we could actually measure, you know, that bike had been out on 54 journeys, that had saved, you know, had made sure that blood had got from one place to another, and, you know, it actually saved lives. So it's just like, how inspirational can you get? And it really was, you know, someone following their particular passion for a great purpose.
And I love those sorts of stories, because it shows how, you know, we're back in the sort of 20 years ago, Mike, when we were working together, and there was a, you know, leave yourself at home and bring your professional self to work. But this is far more allowing people to bring their whole self and those other things and tap into, again, you know, I might like motorbikes, but now I'm tapping into being able to help people, all sorts of other things beyond that. So it's adding far more value than you would normally get from the standard coming into work and going home or whatever it happens to be.
I suppose what we're seeing, James, as well, is that more and more people are getting involved, using their skills, their expertise in volunteer. So working with local charities and volunteering their expertise. You know, so we've had HR people looking through small charities, HR policies and processes. We've had people coaching the CEOs of charities. We've had people going in and talking to charities about the legal side, because obviously we have a legal team. So we're definitely seeing that whole, you know, going beyond just the general sort of volunteering to much more of that, using our expertise and supporting local charities and small businesses to grow and develop.
But the thing you have to add there is, although they're using their existing skills, they're learning new stuff as well. I know I've got a learning hat on, so I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
But if I'm using my coaching skills in a charity, I'm certainly, you know, I'm a coach. I'm good at that. I can do it. I'm not, you might think I'm not learning anything, but I'm learning masses about the way in which that charity operates. Mm. The same with the HR person going in and doing the policies and procedures. our HR people are used to large scale, dealing with hundreds and hundreds of people, and they go in there and they see the difficulties or the challenges that that charity might have. So they're learning another aspect of that role that they never would have had the opportunity to do if they were just on a training course.
And I've also seen the sort of like that the whole emotional intelligence and empathy side as well. You know, you go and work with in a food bank and actually realize what local communities are facing, what individuals the challenges they're facing at the moment, and it does give you a completely different mindset. You walk away think you know, very differently, and I think that's something that's you know, emotional intelligence, empathy, it's hard to learn, but actually going out and experiencing it, that you can bring back into the organization and think about your actual, the people that your colleagues, you know, your team members that also could be facing those challenges. I think it really does sort of, sharpen your sort of perspectives. And that's what I've seen a lot of.
And sometimes we have a duty to remind people of that, because like learning on job, you kind of think, well, no, you remember the days of Investors in People when we were doing Investors in People, you'd say to people, what learning have you had? And they'd say, well, I haven't had any. And so what did your manager talk to you about on your first day? And they say, well, this and this and this. And what can you do now that you couldn't do then? Well, that and that and that. And they just forget the fact that they're learning on job. So sometimes we have to say, look, the benefits that you've had from this are, what did you learn from that? What did you learn about that organization? So, you know, people are learning all the time and they're not necessarily recognizing it, but it's, you know, they're definitely getting it.
It's definitely something that we're building into things like development action plans now. So it, you know, we're talking with our people managers, and that they've, you know, quite often just go to a traditional course to learn, and we're actually trying to get them to think about how can they get those skills, experiences through volunteering. We've developed sort of a lovely matrix, a skills guide with you know, what skills people can learn from particular volunteering activities. Again, to make it easy, it's built into the development action plan process now, isn't it? So we're seeing line managers thinking about learning in a different way.
I wasn't involved, but one of the favorites that I saw recently was this this opportunity for everybody to go to a local school and do mock interviews with year 10s, year 11s. And some of the people who came back from that thing, the things they learned about how to interact with people that they don't normally interact with, tremendous.
And it feels like it's, you know, building that momentum, and you're starting to get to that point where, you know, it's getting established. And you've also talked a lot about sort of building infrastructure, architecture, or, you know, measures and tools and guides and making those things work. So along that journey, as we know with any change journey, there's things that have worked, haven't worked. So what are the lessons you've learned along the journey that you would sort of skip through next time, or you could share those lessons with anyone who was considering a similar journey?
I think for me, probably I wanted to launch into this in a big way very quickly. And I think that's me all over. But actually holding back a little bit and making sure that everything's in place before the launch, making sure that, you know, everybody's really bought into it. I think that's been a big learning for me, is, you know, don't just go out there with a big fanfare and expect people to volunteer. I think we had to make sure things were in place. I think one of the things I've learned as well is really linking what we're doing with sort of a business narrative and a business imperative. So I think we've had much more take up about volunteering when we've actually explained why we need to do it. Well, you know, so why are we going into schools? So yes, we've been doing STEM education in schools for a number of years, but if you explain that we need more young people to come through it to the business. We need to grow our talent pipeline, and that, you know, that this is something that the UK haven't done very well for years. I think people have an understanding, oh, actually, yeah, I have to take responsibility for building that talent pipeline. It's not just HR that can do that. So I think, yeah, really emphasising the why and the purpose, I think, has definitely helped.
Yeah. I mean, cultural change, as we all know, takes a long time and isn't something that you decide at the top you're going to do and it happens tomorrow. Mm. It's only cultural change when everybody in the business is talking about it. And what we're starting to hear now is in conversations, you're starting to hear people talking about social impact, about volunteering, about experiential learning, about those kind of things come up in conversations. People are coming to us and coming to Kirsty's team and asking about opportunities. I think some of the things that we did really well was Kirsty pretty early on, probably 2 years ago now, created a team that would focus in on social impact. So we've got, you know, an individual who's responsible for volunteering, an individual who's responsible for schools outreach, and that team has done such a fantastic job in pushing those volunteering hours. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just always, I mean, Kirsty's said it, but it's explaining the why, but not just at a top level in every context. So for me, if I've got a learning and development activity going on and I want them to do X, which could be a piece of volunteering in a school, I'm telling them why I'm doing it. This is the benefit to you now in terms of learning. This is the benefit to the organization in terms of fulfilling our commitments. So explaining that why piece in every aspect of what we do.
And obviously you two have got a lot through, you know, managing this process and managing this change. But what have you got yourselves individually from volunteering you've done, or, you know, Mike, you on the farm shoveling some manure, which I know you've done lots of in your career, but, you know, yes. What other stuff?
I won an award for clearing the most litter off Lansing Beach. So, yeah. What more can you want?
That was good because there wasn't much rubbish on that beach.
This was the first time we got rid of all the rubbish the first time we did it.
I'm now a chair of a board of trustees for a food bank. And that's something that I'm very passionate about. I was a CEO of a small charity beforehand. So it's that being able to support them as they develop. It was at a key point when they actually brought in quite big lottery funding. So I've been able to help with the HR stuff, the monitoring, but also I've learned so much from them. And, you know, the absolute commitment they have for supporting their community and how they would go above and beyond anything you can expect. I mean, I saw something come out yesterday where they're asking people, new mother, and they were asking who's going to cook dinner on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I was like, I might just give some money here because my dinners are not good. Yeah.
From my point of view, I've done a lot of things I haven't done ever before. So I've marshalled the Brighton Shine Walk, which is great fun. I've marshalled the local fun run at near where I live, which was even better fun because I got to control the traffic. And on a professional level, I've got a license to introduce exciting, interesting development activities that benefit everybody. So it's actually made the bigger programs that we run far more interesting, far more exciting. So, you know, it's helped me on several levels.
And I think that passion sort of boils out from both of you in this conversation, both in terms of what impact you're having at work, but what it's giving back to you two as well. So what do you see coming next for this in terms of what's happening at Talis?
More hours, eh, Kirsty? More hours.
Yeah. At the moment, I think we're reaching about 13% of our employee base, who are regularly volunteering, and I want that to go up to at least 20%. So that's my ambition, is to so that more people are involved, not the same people doing more hours, that more people are involved. So that's one of our things. I think one of the things in next steps is we've got a whole new lot of early careers starters, and we are really starting them well with, you know, they have a volunteering section in their induction program, and we're setting them in the right direction. So I think that's a big step forward, so that they come into the organization understanding why we're expecting them to go out and volunteer. So that's another. And another thing is that I love data, but is some actual live dashboards, so I don't have to keep producing loads of data for people, that they'll be able to find their own data to show, you know, the great work that's going on in individual parts of the business.
Yeah, for me it's a simple escalation really. It's about how do we make sure that there is a social impact activity in every development program we put together, and you know, as we grow the associate pool, so we're going to work with a number of different new associates this year, getting them to understand whatever we do has to have that social impact part of it. So it's how we do that and how we therefore spread that word so it meets Kirsty's objective to get to 20 and 25 and 30% of the employee base.
Yeah, some fantastic ambitions there, and I hope you get to achieve those. Now, I know Talis is a multinational organisation, and this is a UK government initiative. So what's happening, or has this permeated beyond the UK in any way, shape or form?
Yes, it has. I think, it's something that is now being looked at in our the new strategic plan. So at group level in France, we know there's an issue with recruiting engineers and for young people finding science sexy. So I think there is definitely going to be in our new strategic plan much more of a focus on that STEM or STEAM sort of education outreach. So I think it is permeating through, and I think that focus on volunteering, I think they're surprised how far we've got, and I think it is definitely getting to globally, maybe we'll be, well, Mike and I'll be out there globally.
I've done enough globally, but I did run the Leading for Results program recently in the UK, which had people from 16 countries within Talis on it, including 2-3 HR directors, and we put them through a volunteering activity, and they absolutely loved it, and they were all talking about it when we did the evaluation. It was one of the things that came out as the most impactful, so they're talking about to their people about how they can implement that kind of thing and what the benefits they could get. So there's no question that we've touched a nerve, and I think it's only a matter of time before it spreads everywhere.
So I think it's a really inspiring story for people to see how you can go from that sort of initial bit of legislation, regulation or rule change or something else, and really drive something through. And the passion from the two of you really does sort of come through in the discussion. So if anyone's thinking, actually, even if I don't have a legislative or regulatory imperative, I've really loved some of the stuff I've heard today, and I think that could help, and I think it could tackle some of those challenges or add some benefit to our development programs, or, you know, get us beyond writing or attending courses as the only way of learning something. How can they sort of get in touch with you or follow along to see what happens in the story?
Well, happy for people to connect on LinkedIn, James. You know, we've got a fairly strong presence on LinkedIn. Or if they want to drop us an email, they can drop me an email. I have no problem with that at all. Be a pleasure to talk to anybody about this. It's a subject that is really close to my heart.
Same with me. LinkedIn or reach out via email. That'd be great.
Okay, and what we'll do is make sure all of your contact details, so emails, LinkedIn contacts, etc., are in the show notes below the podcast. But I'd really like to thank you again for joining us today. It's been a really great conversation.
Pleasure. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the learning effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.